Revelation, we say, is conveyed commonly in a material form. And those material signs guide our actions, but alone they provide only hints on what to do. So I want to explore the additional ingredients that lead us to say a sign is informative. I'll use arrows as an example. And arrows are part of our heritage as weapons and sports equipment. So arrow signs are widely understood, but their use is seldom formally taught, though they're inescapable in urban settings and in the countryside. There are all sorts of styles, partly because arrows are a family of weapons. Arrows were shot from bows and hurled from slings. Often the steel heads of the broad arrow and the pheon were stored in armories. Warriors attached the heads to shafts just before battle. That's why heraldic images often show just the head of the arrow. The repertoire of arrow signs reflects this variety of arrows and includes fletched, barbed, nocked, and broad arrows. But for some purposes, manicules are alternatives. However, the arrows have many, many more uses, partly because metaphorical references to arrows conjure up the swiftness and the sureness alluded to in the Fletcher's Company motto. On danger signs, arrow strikes provide a simile for electric shock. Arrows can be emblematic in heraldry and in pictorial allegories, for instance here recording the martyrdom of St. Ursula. This 18th century satirical cartoon, actually about excessive British government borrowing, shows on the lower left bales on the dockside labelled with broad arrows, indicating that they're crown property. Earlier, a royal declaration authorised exclusive use of the broad arrow for marking royal stores, including growing trees reserved for naval use, which encouraged cunning New Englanders to mark promising trees with the royal emblem so they misinformed their neighbours and preserved the trees for themselves. Even in 1984, the broad arrow was an official sign of crown ownership. Primarily, broad arrows marked military goods. A British mapmaker's military origins, for example, are reflected in the broad arrow under the horizontal line of the surveyor's benchmarks. Perhaps more evident in the metal version, which shows clearly the broad arrowhead, which gives the benchmark state authority. Prisoners' clothing was government property and accordingly marked with broad arrows to become a favoured symbol for cartoonists who wanted to identify convict characters. So you've seen that arrows, through custom and practice, can act as metaphors, similes, emblems and identifiers. They have multiple uses. An arrow can also connect to a spot or a thing, an attribute. In this case, an historical account is associated with a place. And here, an arrow attributes a position on a land boundary to a specific point on the ground. In a hospital, an arrow on a body locates the area to be operated on. So an arrow could signify a range of things, but often the potential ambiguity, as you've seen with with the leg. Often the potential ambiguity is resolved by the arrow's relationship with its situation. Arrows on signposts, for example, gain significance for people on the spot through their awareness of the sign's relationship with its surroundings. The elevation and the signs for the cardinal points tells us that this is a weather vane, indicating the wind's direction. And the arrow's relationship with the other elements of this particular device make the arrow's role apparent, certainly to those that have been trained to use it. And here, the arrow gets its significance by being part of a gas meter. The arrow indicates the red pointer's direction of rotation, reminding the meter reader how, with this meter, the fractions of a cubic foot are to be read. The double-headed arrow shows the round piece of plastic can be rotated. Since it's on the back of a clock, you'd expect it to move the clock's hands. And these arrows only make sense to those who know that there are water valves underneath the covers. They show in different ways the valves have to be turned to be opened. So arrow signs signal actions, but may need qualifiers clarifying what action is needed. Here, the expected action is looking. And the presumption is that those wanting to cross the road know what to look for. The arrow on this ticket hints at how to insert a ticket into a machine, but also requires the ticket holder to know about ticket machines and their use. And we need to make sense of arrows that aren't to be followed literally. First, the stated object, the Tate Modern, implies the arrow doesn't mean pull, push, insert, or rotate. And secondly, conventionally, this arrow means not go straight up, but go straight on. Here, a grammatical analysis would say the subject of the verb, the arrow, the verb-like arrow, isn't explicit, but the object is go to the lighthouse. Though often the subject is implicit. Here, those interested in finding the terminal are the subject, of course, and the terminal is also the object. And this sign provides an object and an implicit subject for those who understand the code. But an arrow sign may address its intended audience explicitly. That is, the grammatical subject is stated alongside the verb signalled by the arrow. In this case, you, that's people who are in front of the map, are the subject. However, making sense of the arrow's object needs map reading skills. But even with a simple and complete grammatical construction with an explicit subject, object, and verb-like arrow, it's sometimes hard to tell exactly what the sign is asking us to do without any reference to the context. There are more elaborate grammatical constructions. Here, the ascending arrows have different uses that we're actually able to resolve. So although arrows can have the same shape and be verb-like, they can have different meanings. This sign addresses cyclists, showing them their temporary route. And the bicycle picture is the subject. I'm the cyclist, I'm the subject. But the blue sign on the right is sighted to warn motorists. So the bicycle picture, together with its arrow, is in fact the object. Juxtaposed signs can actually conflict. What we have to do is hope that the situation and the reader's knowledge resolves the apparent contradiction. Ultimately, neither subject nor object nor qualification is necessary. The arrow, together with the rest of the situation and our experience or training, can make the arrow's significance clear. Now, these are all pictures of arrows, and they're actually no use to us. They're only useful if you're near the sign, if it's to do with what you're doing, and if you're familiar with the customary use of such signs in your current surroundings. It's the situation, the perceived relevance, and our practices, as well as the sign, that stirs action when we encounter it. Arrow signs are all much the same. They're interchangeable. The style doesn't matter too much. What makes the difference is us, our habits, knowledge and training as sign makers and readers. That and the situation we find ourselves in. That's what guides our actions. Knowing what to do, that's what leads us to say an arrow is informative. So my conclusion is that we make the difference.